So the prospect of utilizing our publicly owned stadium, which has just been refurbished a few years back, as you guys know, for hundreds of millions of dollars, to use that facility to welcome the world to British Columbia and Vancouver in 2026 is a much better idea today than it was in 2018.
Halford and Brough.
Wow.
You need an army.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
There is one main question.
Why are you guys on the air?
Yes. But also, how can the Canucks win the Stanley Cup?
Go off, young king. Go off.
What? Record levels almost of house positivity. What?
Go off.
Yeah.
What?
I'm a bit of a hockey nerd, so I follow pretty much everybody. And yeah, so I immediately felt confident with the way I could fit in with the group. And, you know, I know Bo's game well. It kind of fits similar to mine. So, you know, I see how I can fit into that lineup quite easily and make an impact.
It was a tidy piece of business, I would say. That's how I would classify this as the Vancouver Canucks. I think Jim Benning deserves kudos and credit for, again, as many people pointed out going into this expansion draft process, taking advantage of an opportunity.
You know, I kind of played the rover role in Dallas, and by no fault of anybody's but my own, I guess, is making myself as versatile as possible to them. They were able to play me wherever they needed me on a given night. So, you know, some nights I'd show up and I'd be left wing, some nights I'd be right, and some nights I'd be center, never knowing necessarily which line I was going to be on.
Now, I still want to see this guy play. I'm always wary of the analytics reports that you get on players because Jason Dickinson came from a very different team. That was a very good defensive team in Dallas that had a checking mindset.
Why you got to be so negative? I didn't think about that.
Giddy up. Here are your hosts, Mike Halford and Jason Brough.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:02 on a Tuesday. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Nephew Dom, how are you now?
Suns in seven.
Suns in seven, indeed. Although Milwaukee in six is what they'll be saying tonight in Deer Country, the Deer District. We'll get into that in a little bit. Before we do anything Sprots-related, I need to tell you that the Halford and Brough Show in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. The music's still playing, Dominic. And now...
I fade it out. We do this every morning.
You play it that long?
Over time, yeah.
That's what she said. I don't know what that meant. There's a lot to get into on the show today. This despite the fact that yesterday might have been the slowest day on the sports calendar for 2021 so far.
It was so slow.
Mm-hmm.
How slow was it?
How slow was it?
It was so slow that in my notes, under what happened, the Blue Jays made the cut.
Also, the phrase, it was really slow, made the notes. There wasn't a lot going on.
The baseball community is not happy with you right now.
Okay, so...
That's the baseball community's fault for being part of a slow day. There wasn't a lot going on. That said, it was a busy day for us yesterday as we were recapping everything that's going on in the National Hockey League from a wild weekend of expansion draft ramifications. And this week is going to be very busy because we are now just 24 hours away from D-Day for the Seattle Kraken, where they choose and select their team via the expansion draft that goes tomorrow. But then we're looking way ahead. Let's tell everybody what's happening on the program today. 6:30, our good buddy Justin Bourne, Fan 590 in Toronto, Sportsnet's NHL coverage. We'll catch up on a bunch of these stories that have been making the rounds over the last 24, 48, 72 hours. A lot of questions still about who the Kraken will take in the expansion draft. Is Carey Price going to be an option? How hurt is Carey Price? We'll get into all that with Justin Bourne at 6:30. 7:30, first-time guest on the program as we now, this Game 6, we wade into the NBA Finals. Our apologies for not being all that into the NBA Finals thus far. It's been a busy time. It's been a lot going on. We had England at Euro. We had all the hockey news.
I think it's us. It's less us being into the NBA Finals and more us reading through the texts from the listeners and going, nobody is talking about this NBA Finals.
That's true. And even though some of our listeners would say, why are you talking about so much soccer? Shut up. We would say, shut up. we're going to do it anyway.
No.
There was a lot more interest in Europe.
There's way more interest in the Euros, especially the way things ended for England.
I'm mostly talking about Andrew and Victoria, I think.
He was
very upset every time the word soccer got mentioned on the
Shut up!
The reason I bring this up is because at 7:30, Craig Koshin, who is the studio host for the Milwaukee Bucks coverage on Bally Sports Milwaukee, is going to join us. So it's a big, big night in Wisconsin. Game 6, NBA Finals, in Milwaukee. The Bucks have a chance to win their first NBA title since 1971. You were like 11 years old back then.
They're 4.5-point favorites, too. And from the sad club perspective here in Vancouver, I think a lot of us are probably feeling for the Phoenix Suns because this is almost exactly what the Canucks did, right?
Nobody goes up 2-0 in a final.
At least the Canucks won one more game after that.
Maybe the Suns will as well, although it's certainly not trending in that direction. In large part because they do not have a bench.
They have to stand the whole game?
They have to stand the entire game. It's a difficult proposition for those players.
It's exhausting.
That's why when they come in, they're really tired, and they don't do anything on the floor. So Craig Koshin at 7:30. 8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz is going to join us. We could probably ask Drantz our poll question as it pertains to the Vancouver Canucks, and we'll get into that in what happened as well. Of the following four Canucks, who do you least, and that's in all caps, least want to lose in the expansion draft? Zach McEwen, the Loon. Zach McEwen's not the Loon. Zach McEwen, Matthew Highmore, Cole Lind, Braden Holtby. Did you vote yet?
Yes, I had trouble voting. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Braden Holtby is definitely not the one I'm worried about losing. Frankly, like, to be perfectly honest with you, and with all due respect, I'm not worried
about
losing any of these players. Cole Lind is winning this poll quite easily, actually. He's got 50% of the votes. There's been around 160 votes. Zach McEwen is second at 26%. I actually voted for Matthew Highmore just because I want to see more of him. I haven't seen enough of this guy. He was the guy, in case you may have forgotten, that was traded for Adam Gaudette. And I thought at times he looked okay. Like he could be a serviceable piece in the bottom six. Zach McEwen, I was a big fan of. At least I was a fan of his story. At the end of the day, after seeing him play quite a few games, I don't think he can. I don't think he can play at the NHL pace. And I don't mean his skating isn't good enough or anything like that. I don't think he compute the game at a high, and maybe his hands can't keep up.
There's an element of that.
There's
an element of that.
I do like his physicality. I like his willingness to drop the gloves, but ultimately you still have to be able to play. Cole Lind, I'm going to be in the minority here, and I hope I'm wrong. This is one of those prove me wrong children type of moments that we've had so many times with Canucks prospects. And
countless.
I don't know how many of them have actually
proven me wrong.
Have any of them actually proven me wrong? Not really.
No, not the ones that you've put to task.
Not really.
No.
Cole Lind to me just doesn't look like he can skate at the NHL level.
Right. That's probably his. I mean, him and Gadjevich, who's not on this list, but is another option for Seattle if you've read any of the expansion draft lists. Those guys, the biggest knock on them is can they skate at an NHL level? Now, again, we've said this with Lind a few times, but it's worth reiterating. There has been a trend throughout his hockey career that every time he ascends to a new level, it does take him a little while to find his feet and get his skating legs, I suppose, and then he starts to thrive. I remember writing countless articles with an interview with Ryan Johnson, the general manager in Utica, and a lot of them at the time would focus on Lind and Gadjevich. And I know it's his job to be positive and optimistic about all the players that are coming through Utica, but he did really go out of his way to say, look, what you're seeing in counting stats and maybe even just only watching Lind once or twice, we see the potential. And he said this before his sort of breakout at the American League level. So it gave me a little bit more faith that maybe it's not just lip service. There might be
something there.
Yeah. But it is. You bring up a good point. I mean, you see what you see. And it's hard to envision, only because a lot of players don't become better skaters when they get to the NHL, it's hard to envision his skating getting significantly better. But guys do it. I mean, Bo Horvat did it at the NHL level.
It's just more for me what If he's not top six, how effective could he be in the bottom six? Right? Like, do you
That's
think?
That's a good question.
Do you know what I mean? You're kind of like with Bo Horvat. You bring up Horvat. Did he improve his skating? Yeah, he did. But even before he did that, I was pretty confident that he'd be okay in the bottom six because he was pretty tough and he won a lot of battles along the boards. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you could see it, right?
Well,
like he could grind. I don't know if Cole Lynn can grind, and I don't know if he's got a game, if he's going to be good enough offensively. But again, I remember seeing his numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch him play, but I remember seeing his numbers in his first year in Utica and going, there's no way this guy's going to make it. And then the next year, he improved significantly. So hopefully he can improve this year as well.
Yeah. One thing I will add on this is we kind of foreshadow what's to come and what happened. Another guy, you know, lots. This does happen to a lot of guys. Like Lind was an offensively prolific player in junior. And to a certain degree, he's kind of replicated a bit of that in the American League. The newly acquired Vancouver Canuck, Jason Dickinson, former first-round pick, former pretty prolific scorer in the Ontario League with Guelph, and then had to readjust his game. And now, what is he known as? Basically, a defensive center first and foremost, a bottom six defensive center who came in with high draft pedigree and high offensive skill. He learned what his role was in the NHL, and he learned to be versatile and amenable to change. That's probably something that Lynn's going to have to do if he's going to stick, especially on this team this year, assuming he's on the team.
You're
going
to need jam in order to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Okay, so we need to run through what else is happening on the program today here. So to recap, the Drancer at 8. We'll talk about all these things pertaining to the poll question and the expansion draft. Craig Koshin, 7:30 from Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Game 6 NBA Finals tonight. Justin Bourne at 6:30. We mentioned tonight is Game 6 of the NBA Finals. The Whitecaps are also playing again tonight, looking for the rare second consecutive win. They'll be hosting Houston, if I'm not
mistaken. That doesn't matter!
I will say this for our Whitecaps, as we try and push them back into relevance on the local sporting scene, it sounds as though they are on the verge of a fairly significant signing. We will try and effort something along those lines, be it a guest or maybe even the signing itself. It's believed to be Ryan Gauld, the Scottish Messi. So we'll work on that as well. That's what's happening.
The Scottish Messi.
It's a hilarious nickname when you think about it. It's a hilarious nickname.
That is up there with Dutch Gretzky.
Yes, it's right next to it.
Yeah.
Dale Weiss is there wanting to collect royalties off the idea alone. That's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
He's like Messi, only Scottish. Okay, we have a lot to get into on the program today. You're shaking your head over there.
Also,
Dominic.
He's not like Messi.
Right. What if he was like Messi, but not, and not Argentinian, but Scottish? And then the Whitecaps gave him several million dollars. Dom, you're shaking your head over there. What's going on?
Just, it's funny, because Scottish Messi, it's just hilarious.
Why do we bring him into the conversation? Why
Dom or Scottish Messi?
Wow.
Well, yeah.
But what a jerk.
Hungarian Messi, as they call him.
No. We had Pushcash. Like, relax.
All right. That's everything that's happening on the program today. Dom, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened? Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
So the news broke yesterday during the Halford and Brough show right here on Sportsnet 650 about Nashville Predators prospect Luke Prokop. In case you missed it, Prokop became the first openly gay NHL player, though technically hasn't played in the NHL yet, joining Carl Nassib from the Las Vegas Raiders as the second prominent active athlete to come out as gay in a matter of months. The news was across the board. It obviously transcended sport. You saw a lot of it on traditional news outlets that normally only cover sports in a sort of curiosity, cursory way. And the reactions throughout the day on Sportsnet 650, we had a wide range of guests on. But the news broke when we were on, so we didn't really get a chance to get any audio on the air whatsoever. And really, quite honestly, have a thorough, nuanced reaction. We were reacting in real time as Dom read the news to us. So the only thing that I wanted to say yesterday that I didn't really get a chance to say, and it's largely a reiteration of what I said when Carl Nassib made his announcement a couple months ago, is a lot of people were asking, why are we talking about this? Why is this important? Why is who another person attracted to newsworthy? And I'll say it again, representation really matters. If you look at a variety of the projects that a lot of gay athletes and LGBTQ athletes are doing, it's to work with foundations and projects dealing with youths who are struggling with their identity or how their lifestyle will be received by their peers and family and loved ones. And they want to see somebody out there that's going through the same things as they're going through and experiencing the same things they're experiencing. And I always liken it from my perspective in the tiny little insular world I live in. What does representation mean, or how has it become effectful? And I always use the Steve Nash comparisons. I remember when watching Steve Nash, I remember watching him play at Santa Clara when he was on CBS on March Madness on national television.
Like, wow, he's Canadian.
It does.
Unbelievable.
That's a good point. It does mean something when you see someone doing great things and playing on the biggest platform that looks like you or plays where you played or grew up in your neighborhood, all these sorts of things. I remember playing St. Michael's in Victoria in an exhibition tournament when we were in grade 10, I think. And I remember saying, like, this is the school where the guy that was in the NBA came from. Like,
do you think those things matter? Because of Steve Nash, that's why you made the NBA?
It is. I can largely credit Steve Nash for making the NBA. Anyway, in no way as profound or significant or meaningful as what athletes like Lou Prokop and Carl Nassib are doing. But
well, people say, why does it matter? It's because, well, obviously it does matter because no one before Luke Prokop has had the, I don't want to say courage because I don't want to judge people that hadn't said it, 10, 20 years ago, but you know there were gay players playing in the NHL.
Correct.
You know it.
Yes.
It would be a miracle if there weren't. None of them admitted it publicly. So that's why it matters. So obviously something in society was keeping them from admitting it, and now it's different. I did find, now I'm not saying anything in a judgmental way, but I did find it interesting that Luke's story or his coming out was, I thought, quite different from a media perspective than Carl Nassib's. I thought Carl Nassib's was just like, I'm filming in the backyard, that's it. Luke seemed to be quite coordinated from a media perspective.
Sure.
Like he had lined up, he told a story to Pierre LeBrun.
Yep.
And then I think he was on, was he on the 31 Thoughts podcast?
And he did an interview with
ESPN. Elliot Freeman. Yeah. Like, and I'm not, and I think the reason I said that is, I bring this up is because when we talked about Carl Nassib coming out, one of our big questions was, gee, I wonder how involved he's going to be from an activist perspective. Do you know what I mean? And we weren't quite sure because he said in his Instagram post, well, I'm quite a private person, but I felt this was important to do.
Yeah.
So he went about it in that way. And there's no one right way or another.
Yeah, and I think that's a refreshing part of this is that everyone has their own life, their own story to tell, and the ability to tell it however they please. If someone wants to have a more coordinated approach on a multiple outlet basis, terrific. If someone wants to pop on Instagram Live and say what they need to say and then dip out, that is terrific too. We do have audio this is Sportsnet audio. Luke Prokop.
From Central.
Sorry?
From Sportsnet Central.
Sportsnet Central. Luke Prokop discussing his decision. This is from yesterday. We'll play the audio now.
You have to get to a point where I think you don't really necessarily care anymore about what other people think. Obviously, there's people out there that won't agree or, you know, have their own opinions. But at the end of the day, it's the people that love and support you no matter what that are gonna be there for you. And that was my main reason and why I felt comfortable posting it today was that I felt I had such a supportive and inclusive family and friends that could help me during this. It's cliche, but I get to be free. You know, it felt like there was a 100-pound anvil or weights just holding me down. And now I can go around, be myself, not have to worry about who cares, who knows, who doesn't. I can go to the gym, focus on that. Go to hockey, focus on that. Hang out with my friends, focus on that. Go to work, focus on that. I don't have to have any of these other, you know, extra thoughts running in my mind, and I can just truly focus on what I'm doing in that moment.
I think there's some people that take the opinion. We've certainly, I don't want to get too into the negative part of this,
yeah,
because we've had, we have had a few texts in, and they're like, "Who cares? So it's this. So what?" And I think these people are trying to tell us in a very aggressive way that they don't care.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Some people do.
Absolutely.
In fact, quite a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm. And I think the hope for a lot of people is that people that, and I'll use just the term trailblazers just because they're the first, right? But the hope is that once the trail has been blazed, that other athletes in the future, or other people, quite frankly, across any industry, any walk of life, it doesn't become an issue. It's not something that needs to be announced. It's so, not something that needs a coordinated media attack. It's just people living their lives without judgment.
Well, here's a question for the people that are like, this isn't a news story. If it's not a news story, then why hasn't it been done before?
Yeah, I don't really subscribe too much to the people that... I think maybe if they're trying to...
They're almost trying to say, like, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care. I'm, you know, like, why is this a big deal? He can do whatever he wants. Well, clearly that hasn't been the case.
It hasn't.
You know, it hasn't. Like, it just hasn't.
There's something to be said for being the first, and we'll leave it at that. Speaking of available audio that we just played, we finally got some available audio of the newest Vancouver Canuck, Jason Dickinson. You'll remember, for the tens of listeners that we had yesterday, the only audio that we had available to us after the weekend was Dallas Stars general manager Jim Nill talking about his departing player. We wanted to learn more about the Canucks' new third-line center. He was on yesterday with the People Show, if I'm not mistaken, Jason Dickinson, where he talked about what a lot of people are curious about, his style of play and the game that he plays. We've got some audio here. Jason Dickinson on what he's bringing to the table as the newest member of the Vancouver Canucks.
I was a forechecker. That was the main thing we did. And so that fits right into my game perfectly. I'll transition the puck, get it up quickly, and attack right away. So it's nothing new to me. It's all I've known, basically. And, you know, I can implement more offense, I think, by creating a definite role for myself. That's where I see the biggest difference. You know, I kind of played the rover role in Dallas, and by no fault of anybody's but my own, I guess, is making myself as versatile as possible to them. They were able to play me wherever they needed me on a given night. So, you know, some nights I'd show up and I'd be left wing, some nights I'd be right, and some nights I'd be center, never knowing necessarily which line I was going to be on.
So there's still some business to be done with Dickinson, obviously. Restricted free agent acquired by the Vancouver Canucks. He's going to need a new contract. But we talked about this yesterday. And Jason Dickinson almost represents a pivot point for the Canucks in their offseason. Because if you look at the offseason as a to-do list, the 3C question has been answered.
Yeah.
It's got a big line through it on Jim Benning's notepad. Mm-hmm. It's scratched off. It's done. They will have to get him to sign to a contract, but that's a foregone conclusion at this point. Now it really does become all about the defense and what's available, what they're able to acquire. There's a lot of different questions that are going to be at play. We will get into that later on in the program. We'll discuss it with Drantz at 8 o'clock. We've got an open segment at 7 o'clock where we can get into some of this as well. We'll also probably circle back on our poll question about who you would like the Canucks least to lose at the expansion draft to Seattle, which, by the way, goes tomorrow night.
Did you have a vote? I put myself out there and said I voted for Matthew Highmore because I hadn't seen him that much, and I thought he brought some energy in the bottom six.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I voted for Cole Lind.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So you see something in his game, or you see something in his story?
I think he's of the four options, I would say that might be the one that could sting the most. I don't think, based on what I've seen of McEwen now, that he's got NHL caliber stuff on a regular basis.
Mm.
Highmore, I was debating, but the only
Zach
real...
Zach McEwen's definitely been given the opportunity.
Right. Highmore, the only reason I wouldn't want to lose him is what you said. I'd like to see more, but I remain far from convinced that if I see more from Highmore... Hey, there's a clever...
Well, of course. I mean, he's 25 years old.
Right. Like, we might see more of Highmore, there it is again, and be like, okay, well, I saw it, and now we don't need it. I do think, based on his history, there might be more untapped potential with Lind than the other two, if that makes any sense.
There definitely seems to be more upside with Lind, based on his draft alone.
Yes. So that's what I'm thinking about as I vote. There's lots more to get into on the program. Coming up, Justin Bourne, Fan 590, NHL Sportsnet coverage is going to join us. We'll talk everything as we lead into tomorrow's expansion draft and the Seattle Kraken finally get to compile their roster. It's Halford, it's Brough, it's Sportsnet 650.
NHL draft coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor. With locations across Western Canada, purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online at Sherritt.com.
Welcome to Kelowna, California. West Coast. Coast.
Yeah. Kelowna, baby. Best place in the world right here. Kelowna, California. Kelowna, California. Kelowna, California.
Hey. 6:31 on a Tuesday. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. This song, of course, in honor of our upcoming guest, Justin Bourne, who just returned from Kelowna. He's back in Toronto now. He's got family up in Kelowna. He, of course, the son of Bob Bourne, former NHLer, New York Islander. And really, this is just an excuse to play this song, I'm not going to lie. We had a couple good summer tracks yesterday. This is another one. By the way, before we get to a Justin Bourne, I need to remind you that the Halford and Brough Show is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Phone lines we go from Fan 590 in Toronto, Sportsnet's NHL coverage. Justin Bourne now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Bourne?
You know, when you say you go to the phone lines, I always feel like I'm some call-in guy from Woodbridge or something. I just happen to be a part of the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Caller number six here. You got a chance to win two tickets to the Lynyrd Skynyrd concert coming up on Friday. Welcome back to the show, one. Thanks for joining us. Two, how was Kelowna?
Kelowna was lovely, but, you know, I'm going to be honest, man. Like, you got kids. My kids of the age were traveling. Just, it sucks. They're yes. 5 and 1, and my mom has a 6-month-old puppy. I am so happy the trip is over. I had a great time, but man, am I glad it's over.
Did you go Vancouver, Kelowna? Is that what you did?
No, we're direct Toronto to Kelowna, but, like, the kids stay on Toronto time, so they're up at 3-4 in the morning every day, so no one's in a good mood. It's unfixable.
But you're back now. You're in the mix. We're a day away from the expansion draft. Everything is normal. We're back in the glut of NHL news. I want you to throw on your general manager's hat for a second here. Now that the list is out and you know who you can select, imagine that you're Ron Francis, the general manager of the Seattle Kraken. Are you, again, in light of the fact that you know who you can take now, are you going to be in go-for-it mode and take the likes of Price and Tarasenko and Landeskog, if that one works out? Or are you going to play the long game and stockpile for the future?
Well, you know, this sounds like oversimplifying, but I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to take, is that I don't think you can exactly know how it's going to go, and I kind of feel like it's the old best player available thing. Like, in some situations, maybe there's not a guy you like, and you got to say, hey, I don't want any of these guys in the Buffalo Sabres. I'm going to take one of their 20-year-old kids in the American League and hope they turn into something. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, like, if Tarasenko is the best from St. Louis, well, so be it. You know, I think Vegas, people, there's some revisionist history about how they came out in, like, go-for-it mode. I don't think they thought they were going to be in go-for-it mode. Then, holy crap, we're good, they realized, and they kind of adjusted from there, so I think you just take the best guys and kind of make the tweaks depending on if you need to go long game or if you want to ramp it up right away.
Are you like us and you're in that you are completely overthinking this Carey Price situation and wondering what Montreal actually wants to happen with Carey Price?
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure what Montreal really wants. Do they want to lose Carey Price or are they desperate to keep him?
I am of the belief that they want to keep him. I think this came down to a flex-off between Bergevin and Ron Francis. And, you know, Francis was trying to extort good players out of him. And basically, Bergevin's going to say, you know, doing what he can to keep both Allen and Price. I do think they want to keep him. But at the same time, I wouldn't want him. Not because I don't think he's a good goalie or a good guy or, you know, anything of that sort. It's just, I can't believe we're sitting here talking about a 34-year-old with 5 years and $50 million left on that deal. and thinking that, you know, it's a smart investment for an expansion team. He's likely not going to get better, but likely worse every year. We are talking about knee and hip issues. I mean, I don't know, man. I just don't know that it's a smart move, but I think Francis is smart to play it like he will take him if they don't give him something. So I think there's a big game of chicken going on between two GMs right now.
You mentioned the Vegas expansion draft as we kind of look back on what's happened and then what might happen in the future. One thing, and we talked about this a lot yesterday, is a fundamental change, or so it seems, from a lot of NHL general managers is that they're no longer coming out of their shoes or drastically overthinking how to protect guys. It almost seems like the script got flipped a little bit where the general managers collectively said, we'll make the decision tougher on Seattle as opposed to making it tough on ourselves by putting some high-priced, big-name, big-talent guys up for draft. And then you kind of, as you said, you have a flex-off where you look at Ron Francis and it's who's going to blink first, and you put it on Seattle. And I think that's going to be the biggest fundamental difference between the Seattle draft and the Vegas draft.
Totally agree. And, you know, it's funny, too, is like in retrospect, some of the decisions that were being made that were stressful, you go, like, I know just the least example is they gave up Brendan Leipzig. There was much hand-wringing over the loss of Brendan Leipzig, and, you know, not a big deal in the end. I do feel like that a lot of GMs have come to terms with the fact that you can't fall in love with what some of your players might become. You know, like, if everyone's going to lose a guy and you lose a guy too, it's really not the end of the world, so don't give away, oh, I don't know, Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault at the same time. So, yeah, there's been a bit of an education from the first draft. By the way, do you remember in 92, 93 when it was Tampa and Ottawa? They got every team's 15th best player?
Yeah.
Like, how insane is it now? It's just wild how different it is for these expansion teams than the ones of yore.
I was listening to two guys break down the Atlanta Thrashers expansion draft.
Yeah.
My God. Like, I know that they had other issues aside from a lousy hockey team in Atlanta, but it was awful. Just awful, the type of players that they had to deal with. It was basically guys that couldn't crack anybody else's NHL roster. It was the 15th forward or the 8th defenseman. And then they all got together and decided to play a season together as Atlanta Thrashers. Like, it's amazing in retrospect that some of these teams were able to climb from the depths, because the expansion process used to be so prohibitive to having any success out of the gate.
Yeah, if you were Bettman, I wonder if you look back at those situations and go, man, we just didn't give that franchise a chance to survive. Mm-hmm. I understand now they're asking such an exorbitant sum from these guys that they want them to be successful, but at the same time, like, if you want the franchise viable, like, look at how hard it is to get good once you're bad. Look at the Sabres. Look at the Oilers. Look how long these teams have been bad. If you don't give them a chance out of the gate, it's impossible. So, it's interesting looking back at Atlanta and just thinking, man, we never gave that franchise a chance.
Well, the other thing on this, too, is when you put teams in that position, the draft becomes 10 times more important than it already is. Like, it's without question right now, the draft is vital for the future of a franchise when you're in a stable moment. But when you stink and you're drafting first, second, third overall, and you look back, it's almost a death knell if you blow any of those picks, because all your picks have to hit in order for you to be good. And that's just not realistic.
No, you're right. That is an immense amount of pressure on something that, by and large, is a crapshoot. I mean, I understand there's scouts and stats and whatever, but, like, it's pretty close to a crapshoot once you go beyond the round. So, it puts franchises in an unfair situation where they have to get wildly fortunate, and that just didn't happen for the Thrashers.
Can I just interject and say how much I hate the argument that the Seattle paid a lot of money for an expansion team, so they should, like, they've bought a good team. They've deserved the right to buy. Franchise values across the board in every North American major league sport are through the roof. Mm-hmm. Even if Seattle was awful, even if Seattle was getting the 19th best player on every team, they would be worth more than what the Blue Jackets paid for entrance into the league or whatever. You know, like, it's if the Seattle ownership right now could sell their franchise, they would get back what they invested.
Yeah. It's probably $1.5 billion or something. Like, the Buffalo Sabres, train wreck. They've been been nothing but bad. They got no good players. And you could probably sell that franchise for well over $1 billion right now.
Exactly. So, anyway, I just wanted to interject. I wanted to also talk about the upcoming draft. And there, Halford and I don't profess to be super, you know, prospects experts. We don't watch a lot of junior hockey. Yep. We tend to farm out those opinions to others that have the time and inclination to do that. But I do find it interesting that there is a potential goalie that could be taken in the top 10. And I wonder if the return of the first round goalie prospect, like, I wonder if that's going to start to return after what we saw in the Stanley Cup playoffs, where I believe the final four teams all had a goalie that was drafted in the first round. And of course, Vasilevsky is considered, he's the best goalie in the NHL. It's Jesper Wallstedt. Is that the goalie that could go top 10? I think that's his name. Yeah. Like, honestly, my prospect knowledge is not very high, but I just wonder now if it's going to start to bounce back to having a few more goalies in the first round.
Yeah, I think there should be some sort of policy, you know, internal policy for teams where they went away from drafting goalies high, but there are the elite guys, the obviously special guys who need to be taken. You know, if you can get your hands on one of those guys, you got to do it. So, you know, Spencer Knight looks like he's going to be a player for the Florida Panthers. There is a case where if you can get one of these guys, it does make a lot of sense to me. Carey Price, obviously panning out. Fleury, Hall of Famer. So, yeah, I could see there being sort of this gap between if you know a guy is a guy, he goes early. If you're even questioning it a little, see you in the sixth round.
We're speaking to Justin Bourne from Fan590, Sportsnet's NHL coverage here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So, Bourne, when you saw those lists come out, aside from Carey Price, was there anyone that really jumped to your attention as a guy that, ooh, I didn't see that coming, this could be a really intriguing fit for Seattle, maybe this could be one that puts them on a franchise-altering course where they thought they were going one way and then they were going to go the other? When you saw that list, what did you think? Who's someone else that jumped out at you?
I say that, and you know, I knew that Tampa Bay had a bunch of good players to go, but I love that, you know, we're talking about not overthinking this. They're like, okay, take one of our players. We're still going to be the best team in the league. Because Andre Palat was a name that I was like, man, that's a hockey player.
Yeah.
Yanni Gourde is obviously exceptional, too. So those were nice. And then Nino Niederreiter in Carolina, or Jake Bean. Jake Bean feels like the one guy who could come out of this, and we go, can you believe they let him walk? He ends up being a top pair guy for a 10-year career. You know, that's got to be a tempting one. Really tough call when you look at both Tampa Bay and Carolina.
Were you the one that threw out that Tampa Bay's exposed list could beat Buffalo's protected list? Was that you?
I threw it out, but it's factual, is it not?
It is. They've got it.
Minus Eichel?
I think they could take him in a best of seven series. I like that exposed list from Tampa Bay.
Buffalo's list is like Rasmus Asplund, Henry Yokoharju, Gage Thompson.
Yeah.
Like, what?
There's a couple teams where you look at their protected list, and if you're the Kraken, you're like, pass. We'd like to move on to the next team now.
The Coyotes protected some guy named Capo Bianco?
Yeah, Kyle Capo Bianco.
I'd never heard of that guy.
We almost did this exercise yesterday where we did who are the worst players to be protected, but it felt kind of mean on a Monday. We might save it for tomorrow because it's slow. Anyway, Bourne.
Friday.
It's a Friday material more than anything else. Bourne, we got to get going. I know you got to get going too. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week and the expansion draft and the regular draft. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Justin Bourne from Fan 590, Sportsnet's NHL coverage, right here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Yeah, we were going to, you asked me, you said, Halford, your job is to come up with the worst players on everyone's protected list. And then we went through a couple of examples, you and I, on text, and then it started to feel a little mean.
Super mean.
Yeah.
The player, not so much the teams, but to the player. Like poor Kyle Capo Bianco.
Yes, who has, I think he has 14 NHL games to his credit.
Yeah,
not a lot.
He's working hard.
He's trying his best. God bless him. He's in a tough situation there with the Coyotes. They're not very good. But there are some guys on these lists where they're eyebrow raising. Because again, we have a fundamental idea of what the expansion draft is supposed to look like. You protect your best players. Mm-hmm. and then you expose the rest. But it's obviously a lot more goes into it than that, including this dynamic that we're seeing now where teams are putting their star players on the exposed list and saying, we dare you to take him. He's got a big contract and there's a lot of time left on it. If you want him, great. But that means you now have to deal with the salary cap headache. A lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Reminder, 7:30, Craig Koshin from Milwaukee will join us ahead of a big game. Big game for the Bucks franchise. Game 6, NBA Finals tonight. They have the chance to clinch their first title since 1971. 8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz, as we preview who might go from the Canucks to the Kraken at tomorrow's expansion draft. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Sunshine. 6:49 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford, Brough, Sportsnet 650. What a nice message we just got from High in Victoria. Hey, High in Victoria writes, I appreciate you guys and the work you do, even if my girlfriend doesn't enjoy it. I can only assume, High in Vic, that this either means you have the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650 playing in the house whilst preparing for the day, or she is subjected to this show on the commute.
Probably both.
We have a large cross-section of listeners who subject their significant others to the show on the commute.
Sorry about that.
I can only imagine what that must be like.
We keep hoping.
Significant other saying, really? Again with these guys? They don't seem to do anything productive. Shut up! And that's pretty accurate. But anyway, I appreciate all the listeners out there. Thank you guys for listening. Hopefully your morning commute is going well.
So our poll question this morning is, which of the following four Canucks do you least want to lose in the expansion draft?
And least is capitalized.
Yes, just so people won't get confused. Zach MacEwen, Matthew Highmore, Cole Lind, or Braden Holtby. Now, Cole Lind is winning this poll. Maybe I should have included Jonah Gadjevich in this list. Maybe I should have subbed out one of these four and put Gadjevich in there. Because Greg Wyshynski just published his NHL mock expansion draft, and he took Jonah Gadjevich. And I think his colleague Emily Kaplan also took Jonah Gadjevich.
I saw that.
Maybe they didn't put a whole lot of work or research into Vancouver, or maybe they're onto something.
Maybe they know something we don't. Well, Neil on Twitter, who has tweeted several times about this, is insistent that the one he's worried about losing the most is Jonah Gadjevich.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Neil says that he saw in 5 minutes of action more from Gadjevich than Cole Lind. I'll leave that to you to parse out yourself, Neil. I can't agree with that whatsoever.
Including a horrendous giveaway in his own end.
I didn't see anything because he barely played. Yeah. I still don't really have a clear view of it.
He got in a scrap and had a bad giveaway.
And that was it.
Was that the story of his game?
Yeah, and I don't really know what to expect at the AHL level. The NHL level. I will say this. His work in the American League last year was very promising.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guy who came into his first season of professional hockey, and a ton of red flags and question marks were raised to the point where a lot of people were wondering if he'd ever have the potential to play in the NHL. His skating was an issue. Ryan Johnson, when I spoke to him about it during that first season, Gadjevich's first year in Utica, he acknowledged it, said he's got some work to do. He was a healthy scratch a lot of the time. He had to learn more of what it took to be effective at the pro level. To his credit, he did that. Now, the tough part, and we've seen this with Zach MacEwen, is the growth and maturation at the American League level is important and a fundamental stepping stone to becoming an NHLer. But the jump from being an effective AHL player to being an NHL player is incredibly difficult. And it's not just because the game gets better and there's better players. That's the small brain analysis. The galaxy brain analysis is that the things you do in the American League oftentimes are a result of tons of ice time, power play opportunities,
yeah,
and the chance to have multiple scoring opportunities. All of which, for a lot of these guys, aren't going to happen when they go to the NHL.
Yeah, Gadjevich probably isn't going to go right into the top six. But I will say, on the Gadjevich front, if Seattle's just looking for players from the Canucks that are one day going to have a role in the NHL, there's an argument to make that you would take Gadjevich over Lind, just because you would look at Lind and say, okay, what do you do? Like, why were you drafted? Well, probably because you score, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Gadjevich, I know he scored in junior, but the real probably attractive part to a lot of people is like, this guy's big,
yep,
and totally, he's pretty tough, and maybe he could have a role in the bottom six.
Sure, as an old school net front guy in your bottom six.
Not even net front, just physical. Like, yeah, someone who can go and punish the other team's, mm-hmm, defenseman. I don't know. You need foot speed to do that.
That's true.
That's one of the issues.
But we've talked to Bourne about this before. You know, he's had his cup of coffee playing in the East Coast in American League, so he's pretty well versed. And he was a video coach for the Marlies, so he's pretty well versed in what it takes to get to the next level. It's almost more beneficial to have one attribute that stands out or one thing that you do really well in that situation.
Yeah, what do you do?
Right.
What are you as a player?
Like, I go back to the Canucks with Will Lockwood. He might not be the most complete hockey player, but if you ask anyone, what's the one thing that he can do and do really well? Well, he skates a million miles an hour, and he hits on the, yeah, forecheck. He bangs and crashes. Now,
I'm a relentless skater. I'm going to hound the defenseman, hound the puck carrier. That's what I do.
He might not have outstanding hands or a really good shot or even really a high hockey IQ, but if you know one thing that he can do and do well, it's a lot easier to slot him into a particular role in your lineup. Anyway, we're up against it for time. Before we go, I do have to mention that the fine folks at Dilawri Acura, three locations to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. That's our favorite because our good buddies Dustin and Jordan are down there. Be sure to check them out. You can also go to the Starbucks. You can also get a car wash down there on Terminal Avenue. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. It's the Halford and Brough Show. Big 7 o'clock hour coming up. Sportsnet 650.
NHL draft coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Connect Hearing. Take control of your hearing health and book your free hearing test at connecthearing.ca.